Today is Thursday. It's December 20th, 2018. This is John Williams. By the way, it's 11:15 in the morning. For those of you keeping score at home, we are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio in Chicago. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host evenings Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
I'm Scott Standis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the woefully unprepared for the holidays columnist for the Tribune. I write three times a week, and it usually appears in the paper.
Patty just threw her arms up in touchdown.
Me too. I'm woefully unprepared for the holidays.
It crept up on you, didn't it, this year? It's like all of a sudden you look up and go, man, Christmas is this weekend.
Yeah, I got a thing for Janine, so I'm like way ahead of the game for me.
I got a thing for Janine, too.
Oh.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
We were all doing sort of double entendres that could get you in trouble, but used to be fun off the air, and now I just did one on the air, didn't I? Shame on me. Let's start the show with just a little holiday theme. By the way, Patty's wearing a green sweater. I'm wearing a jaunty festive outfit.
Mm-hmm.
The rest
it's
of you,
brown.
Not so much.
You're wearing a brown outfit.
Yeah, but it's a tie and it's a sweater. I've got cufflinks on, for God's sakes.
Oh, wow. Fancy.
It's a jaunty brown.
In pants? That's a first.
Oh, dear. See?
So what's a favorite thing in Chicagoland that you like at Christmas time, Patty?
Mine is the Lincoln Park Zoo lights. This year, they really went above and beyond. It's absolutely beautiful.
For the first time ever, I went to them last night.
Oh, really?
Our first time. I thought it was pretty terrific.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I love it. And the lagoon, it's all cozy over there. You get a nice hot chocolate, walk back through the zoo again.
It was 50 degrees the night we went last
night,
great? Too. So it was really pleasant. And it's amazing how many lights they have lit up.
Yeah, it's dazzling.
And sometimes it's crowded. It wasn't on our night, but it really is a fun stroll through the lit up zoo.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott?
Okay, crazy. Klingon Christmas Carol. It's Dickens' Christmas Carol done in Klingon, and it's awesome.
That's great.
We're not kidding.
No one's judging.
I am quietly judging him.
Yeah.
Not so quietly. You went, ugh.
Where do they do that?
Theaters around town. It's been a tradition. They actually stopped doing it for a year, but for the almost decade I've lived here, we've gone 8 years.
I wonder why they would have stopped that.
Is the thing you're getting for Janine tickets to Klingon Christmas?
My favorite Chicago Christmas tradition is to never go to the Klingon Christmas show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
boy.
That's right. Our new one. We're starting it
No,
every
I've been
year.
Doing it all my whole life.
Well done.
Oh, come on. It is,
gather around, kids.
Is,
we're not going to
What are we not doing again this year, Mom?
Yay! We're not going to that Klingon.
It's awesome. I swear to God, it's actually awesome.
What does it sound like? What's a line?
Yeah,
Klingon,
don't do that.
Mach, which is, I'm proud to be a Klingon. That I cannot remember how you say the greeting in Klingon is, what do you want? And it's how Scrooge or Scrooge doesn't have any courage, and how the three spirits of Klingon Christmas come and give him courage.
Right.
Through the course of the evening. It's a great show.
No, it's great.
It's like it reminds me of the Big Bang Theory.
It has been.
One year we walked in and there was a whole row of people in the audience dressed as Klingons.
Scott, I will give you a tradition, but I'm worried about your enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's it.
You
care just a little too much.
It's wonderful. It's a blast. It sounded goofy. I went for the first year and we've been going ever since.
Steve, what do you like?
It's pathetic. I can't think of anything that we do every year for Christmas. You should just come down for the caroling by the bean, which is nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it doesn't have to be an annual tradition, but that's a great thing,
that counts.
Too. What a lovely view, too. Mr. Zorn?
I like the lights on the houses in Chicago, particularly like up in Lincolnwood. Northwest side, we do pretty well by lights on houses. We've got lights on our bushes this year. Really great. It brightens up.
Sounds like a Halloween costume.
It brightens up December. I wish that people would leave their Christmas or holiday lights up a little longer in January and February. I just think there's such gloomy months and the lights are so cheerful and... I feel there's no rush to take them down and get everybody looks trash if you don't get them down
That has developed commercially. You know, a lot of businesses do it a lot longer. Michigan Avenue does it a lot longer than they used to.
Well, especially
they
if it's
do it
just
the whole winter.
Especially if it's just the white twinkle lights, then it's kind of cool.
Neighbors don't.
Yeah.
I wish Michigan Avenue kept them up year round on the trees because it just makes the avenue look prettier.
Well, Michigan Avenue is one of the great. I know that people like John Cass, a columnist in the Tribune, love to sort of mock how much time, money, and effort is spent beautifying Michigan Avenue. But the plantings they do, he does in person, if not in print. But he, this isn't about him. I just think it's wonderful how much time, money, and effort they spent seasonally decorating Michigan Avenue.
I agree.
And
absolutely.
This time of year, it's fantastic. I will add Songs of Good Cheer, Eric Zorn, yes. Mary Schmick, and the gang from the Old Town School of Folk Music. I wasn't able to attend this year. Brenda was there. She was in tears. She brought friends. It was just so heartwarming. It's wonderful. And another thing that we've been doing and are going to continue to do now is going to the Music Box Theater in Chicago and going to either It's a Wonderful Life or White Christmas. And you sort of interact with the screen. They have an organ play Christmas music beforehand in this big old theater.
Is it like Rocky Horror Picture Show? You interact with the screen like you throw toast and stuff?
In the case of White Christmas, it is a little bit. People sing along. They laugh at some of the lines that haven't traveled the test of time very well. And it's and people dress up in outrageous Christmas sweaters and outfits and blinking lights, and they bring their own booze and popcorn, and they buy booze and popcorn, and it's a riot.
They also did this year for a fundraiser for Chicago Help Initiative, Miracle on 34th Street.
I saw that on the marquee, so that's at the Music
Box
That
was wonderful,
Theater.
Too, and people applauded when they, you know, when they fire the psychologist and all that.
Hey, I have a trivia question for you around the table here. Does anyone know when the Vatican takes down its Christmas decorations? Seriously, this is a true
thing.
They
put them up?
They put them up, and they take them down
after the Epiphany, probably.
On Candlemas, which is on February 2nd, which we call Groundhog Day, but it's a feast of some sort. And I don't... Scott, you can explain later. I don't know what it is. It's something.
You know,
demarcating line. And I think of that February 2nd, I would be okay with that if that's what people decided February 2nd. But I was good. I remember Rich Roper at the Sun-Times was saying, if you don't take your holiday lights down by, you know, February 15th, you're trash. Like, come on, you know. I really like the way they light up, and I think that the Pope has an idea.
Did you say it's Candlemas?
I said Candlemas. Did I mispronounce that?
Scott, is that when they do remember they used to do the blessing of the throats? Did you ever have that when you were?
Yeah, right.
No,
I'm sorry,
that was right around then. I think.
Was that for
St. Blaise
personalities?
You're onto something there, Steve.
Yeah, you'd walk up to them, and they'd have crisscross candles, and they'd put the candles across your throat.
And then they'd say something in Latin, and you'd feel like you got your ticket punched.
I don't know if it was St. Blaise or what, but yeah, but it was. That's when it was like early February.
And crisscross will make you jump.
Okay, we're going to do our normal now version of the podcast.
That was my 80s reference.
For Christmas, shouldn't we give the president his border wall? And
John Williams is beaten down.
We talked about this last week. Let's not talk a lot about it, but we are, as we speak today, hours away from a government shutdown or not a government shutdown.
No shutdown.
No, you're wrong.
Wait, no,
they got an extension.
What happened, it was significant that you gave the time, because the White House said today that the president wasn't willing to go along with the temporary spending without more money. Mm-hmm. And as we talk, House Republican leaders and others, I suspect, are going to the White House to meet with the president about this. So they kind of, the Dow then dropped about 250, 300 points. So
as a result?
Yeah.
When you put your foot down, you put your foot down. If the president said, I need $5 billion or I won't play ball, then maybe, you know, maybe that's what...
He did say in the Nancy and Chuck meeting, he said, if we can't get it from Congress or elsewhere. So he did sort of leave open the idea. Because remember, they said they were going to search for other cabinet-level positions.
GoFundMe?
They were going to find other cabinet positions where they could get the money so that the taxpayers didn't have to pay for it. That was Sarah Sanders.
Sort of shuttle money from other departments.
Right. Because the taxpayers don't pay for those.
Apparently, she didn't understand the taxpayers paid for
those
other departments,
too. Did you hear, though, that there was a group of veterans in 3 days? They did a GoFundMe page this week for the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got, like, in 3 days, $900,000.
Oh, no, it's over $2 million now.
Is it over $2 million
now? As of this morning.
Okay. What
percentage of $5 billion?
Okay, great, but that's still not getting it done.
That's 8 feet of wall.
I know. It kind of is. But I don't think the number is as telling as... Well, it is kind of telling. It's not enough, but people pitched in that much money. I mean, what a waste of money. But if they're willing to do that, that says that there is some support out there for what the president is doing. He put his foot down on Syria. He said, by God, we're going to do that.
There is definitely support for the wall. I just don't think it's anywhere close to majority support in the polls that I've seen about this. And the Democrats have met him a certain distance on border security. They've given him, $1.6 billion?
Billion, yeah.
But it has to be for sort of enhanced border security techniques. No one has really demonstrated a need for more wall. And there's nothing, you know, the Obama administration spent a lot of money reinforcing the fencing along the border and so on. It's not like there's some, you know, the Democrats or people have some objection to a physical barrier between the countries. It's just that Trump has raised this, the symbolism of this wall, to such a high political point that the Democrats are just saying, no, we're not going to give you this victory. We're going to give you, you know, X billion for border security, but we're not going to let you build your stupid wall because we don't need a wall as you're describing it. And so they've dug in, and I think they've got support from enough Republicans. This ain't going to go through.
I don't know if it was here last week, but there are ways to spend the money so much smarter and more effective. And I don't know if it was on the podcast or somewhere, but I repeated what Senator Durbin said.
Yes.
Was it on this podcast?
Yes, it was on the podcast, yeah.
That, you know, we need to, a lot of the opioids come into the country through legal border crossings, mm-hmm. and we have access to the technology that could stop that. But we're not spending money on that. Instead, we're fighting over this wall.
Well, I think what the great negotiator Donald Trump doesn't get, and it's amazing how badly he's played this, is that people so dislike him or distrust him, either in the mainstream media or on the Democratic side or somewhere in between the right and the left, that even if it were a good idea, it's a harder sell. I totally believe that while we could afford this, we're not going to now because the left is being as stubborn as the right. And I don't blame them. And, you know, and how dumb is Donald Trump if he doesn't get that? You can't bully your way through a wall or anything else you want if you're playing the political game.
You said people don't believe him. You know, yesterday he tweeted that we're withdrawing the troops from Syria because we've defeated ISIS.
Oh.
And today he tweeted that Iran and Russia are unhappy with us because now they're going to have to fight ISIS.
Which, of course, is horse hockey because Putin had a press conference in the last 24 hours where he said, we are thrilled that they're leaving.
But exactly. Right. But the point is, too, they're either beaten or they're not.
Right. Who has to keep fighting them? Right.
You can't leave because we've defeated them one day and then the next they say, oh, Russia and Iran are going to have to fight ISIS. I thought they were beaten.
How surprised were you all by the sentence delay for
Flynn.
Michael Flynn.
I was very surprised that it. I thought my forecast was that the judge was going to give him some time because of what he had done. Mm-hmm. Was not going to go along with either the prosecution or the defense's claim that he deserved no time, but it was going to be something symbolic on the order of the sentence that Papadopoulos served, which was, what, 2 weeks or something? I mean, just to say that you can't totally walk scot-free on something like this. I was surprised that they delayed it, though. Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure what to make of the fact that it's not till March now. And the Mueller's team has indicated that they have squeezed every last drop of information out of Flynn that they can squeeze. That's why they're ready to go to sentencing.
But don't you think it's strange, too, that the judge said, you're a traitor.
Treason, he used the word.
He apologized for that afterwards. But yeah, he actually said, how is this not treason? And he laid into him.
Well, in particular, because the defense team was trying to go with, well, he was ambushed or tricked by the FBI. You know, they thought that they would throw a Hail Mary. I mean, that ticked off the judge. They thought they would take a last minute chance and say, you know, try to persuade the judge and say, well, you know, our poor guy here, he didn't know what he was getting into.
He was not informed by the FBI that lying to the FBI is a crime. I'm not making that up.
And that fueled a weekend of conspiracy theories from Fox TV and the president and all of those that were all refuted directly by Flynn under oath in the courtroom this week. You know, the judge put him under oath and asked him, was he ambushed or did he not know and all of this stuff. And Flynn disputed all of those conspiracy theories.
Well, good enough. But, I mean, I'm amazed that anybody would even try and fly that. Lying is wrong. Lying to the FBI is wrong. Lying to the FBI is a crime. If you didn't know that, shouldn't the first two have been enough? I mean, you shouldn't be lying to the FBI.
It was a terrible play by his attorneys to bring that up in their sentencing memo, to try to say, well, we're pleading guilty, and he's a fine man, and by the way, we shouldn't look too harshly on this because he was ambushed. I mean, that was just crazy on their part. And
former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
I know some eighth graders who know lying to the FBI could get you in jail. You're wearing an FBI hat right now. Did you realize that?
Yeah, I wear it quite often, actually.
So we can't lie to you now either? Lying to Patty Vasquez is a crime.
As a graduate of the Citizens Academy of the FBI.
You are.
She would stop ambushing us.
But isn't it interesting how truth is so in play these days and under this administration? That is, it's okay to lie to the press. It's legal to lie to the press. It's okay to lie to the American people via Twitter. And the president does that all the time, too. So you almost have to remind yourself when and how and where lying is wrong, unethical, and illegal. Truth is in play. It's a very strange time that
way. Yeah, Rudy Giuliani was defending the president. And they said, well, he wasn't under oath.
Right, he wasn't right, under oath.
Yeah.
Okay.
Think of that. Well, he wasn't under oath.
Is Giuliani helping the president's cause?
I really don't think so.
Well, he's helping. Well, I disagree to a point. I think he's helping him to the base. That's who they're talking to. They do not give a crap about what most of us think. They care about that 38% that support them.
Yeah.
That's it. And the Fox News viewers. That's it.
Wasn't he quiet for a while? That was kind of nice, though.
Well, like, didn't he get divorced again, or he was doing something?
He went away for a bit.
He was giving money to his mistress, right?
He was overseas, I think, lining up contracts.
In Moscow?
No.
Eric Zorn suggested today that we marry two topics, the Ariana Grande story and the Stephen Miller hairspray story. This is where we just get utterly petty. This is one of those times, Steve, where it's fun to talk and make fun of people, but more mature people should not do that.
Why are you saying me?
Well, because you call me out on that sometimes. You say, or you call me calling other people out on that. I try to be the arbiter of what is, you know, important to relevant conversation or not. Steve Miller's hairspray is probably not.
It was trending, though.
But
well, when you say hairspray, we're actually talking about spray on hair, not hairspray.
Hairspray on.
It's not like he's trying to make his hair stay in place. He's trying to add hair with spray on his bald.
He was making the administration's case on TV last weekend, and because he's balding, he decided to do some of that. What do you call it?
Spray on hair, I guess.
Spray on hair.
It probably has a brand name.
And it wasn't the same color or texture or length as the other hair that he's grown naturally. So it was kind of pathetic. It really was. When I see people like that, that's a cry for help. It's a cry for hair, but it's also a cry for help. I actually felt bad for him. It looked so ridiculous. Patty, your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, so, no, I mean, you try to imagine, do you have like a pattern that you spray, like you have to put something down to sort of get it in just the right pattern? And does he use cardboard or does someone?
Yeah, it was kind of a semicircle around the front of his forehead there. Yeah.
I was trying to imagine the process and the thinking behind that. That was a good idea.
I'm thinking that there was, again, one person he was trying to impress, and that's Donald Trump. And Donald Trump cares what people look like. He really does care that they're telegenic, and he wants them to look the part. And he probably thought that a bald 33-year-old spokesman wasn't what he wanted, so he wanted just one with receding hair. So, you know, I mean, I don't think he was trying to impress the ladies or anything with
I think it's actually, not to make too much out of it, but we already have. His hair was a perfect metaphor for the administration.
A cover-up.
Yes, kind of. Or a deceit. It was not honest and not well executed either.
And not well executed. That's the,
You have to do it gradually so that people don't notice as quickly.
You know, like we hardly notice the John's toupee, you know.
It looks natural.
It does. It looks very good.
You know, it's because of him that families are separated in tents on the border.
Yeah.
So
we're speaking about Stephen Miller now, not me and my hair.
I was going to say,
well, you know, I know. I mean, he is an important player, and in the administration. Do you remember when he first came out or when they started trotting him out more as an advocate for that policy, as maybe an author of some of that policy, and his, was it father-in-law or uncle? There was a generation above him in his family who wrote a scathing op-ed and said, you aren't here but for the policies that you're now criticizing or trying to abolish. And it was blistering. It was really well written. I'm sorry I don't have the details. Maybe I'll ask Elif to include that as a link at the end of this podcast when you watch it, when you look at it. But it was really well told. So he's an important person.
Yeah. I mean, he's if we're going to have, who was it? Who, the Bush administration had the deck of cards for the Iraqis.
That's
that
right.
Going after.
Yeah, right. Their targets.
I mean, this guy for me is one of the biggest aces. I mean, he's responsible for some terrible things that have happened to people.
So how does this relate to Ariana Grande then?
Well, the Ariana Grande controversy had to do with a social media post by
Michael Rappaport.
Michael Rappaport.
Is it Michael?
Who's a star on what's Avatar? What's the show he's on?
Atypical right now.
Atypical. Okay.
Yeah. Which is supposed to be a very good show. It's a Netflix show.
Is he in Rent also?
No, he looks like the guy in Rent, but he was in, he'd been around for quite a while.
Yeah, pretty good character actor.
But he tweeted out that he found a picture of Ariana Grande without her makeup on, making duck lips and looking silly. And he said, well, look, you know, without her makeup and everything like that, she looks like one of the less hot. What did he say? Something like, she looks like a woman at Starbucks, only less hot or something like that.
Oh,
and he got just torn apart on social media for it. And the thing about it was so weird was that I thought Ariana Grande looked kind of good in this picture. I'm not a real fan of the way she presents herself normally. She's obviously a really good looking woman, but she looked really nice and without her makeup on. And I thought, it was like, why is somebody doing it? Why is this actor jumping into this debate like that?
I am super proud to say I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
I know. I'm looking it up right now.
Zero.
What do you think?
But he's unapologetic, according to USA Today, by the way.
I don't understand I mean, the message behind that, she's not the first, you know, famous, beautiful woman to post a picture of herself without her makeup. And the message is to girls and women and men everywhere that what you see isn't real, right? That it's makeup and it's sometimes photoshopping or filters if it's in a magazine cover. And it's okay to look like this, right? Look at me. This is what I look like. I look very normal and ordinary. And that's empowering and a wonderful message. Why would you dump on that if you're Michael Rapaport?
Well, they do this. I mean, the few times I've stumbled onto TMZ television is they inevitably, how horrible a life would this be? You're Reese Witherspoon and you're running out to get a jug of milk for the kids. Ugh. And you're in sweats and you're doing makeup and you've
somebody
got
catches
some
you.
Ass with a cell phone in your face taking a video, and they talk about it. Here she is without sweats. Here she is without makeup.
Or some ass with a telephoto lens who has been stalking you. And the National Enquirer does this a lot, too, where they'll show, like, this is what stars are like in real life. And they try to get them really unflattering.
Or smoking.
Like on the beach, they'll get them and so on.
I liked when they turned that around and they were like, you know, the celebrities are just like us. You know, that's kind of like, right.
And that's not a bad thing,
right.
Particularly if the person volunteers that. But if you're just trying to out them or shame them for their ordinariness.
Has anyone mentioned how attractive Michael Rapaport is?
No.
Without makeup?
One other topic that is trivial or important, the Trump charity, the Trump Foundation. So the New York Attorney General, a Democrat, has said that this was just a slush fund for Donald Trump even before he was a politician and certainly afterwards. Okay, that's another wrinkle in the Make America Great Again thing, but I'm fascinated by it, and it is so Trump, but I don't think this is as important as the things that we should be paying attention to.
But don't you think it sort of chips away at his confidence? I mean, it's the kind of thing behind closed doors I'm sure he goes nuts over. And every time something like this happens, we'll continue to see that unfold.
Maybe, but it's like Scott was saying, does it matter to the base? And I see this as to the base or to the people at Fox, you go again.
Yes.
And it's our fault, not the president's fault.
Right.
What's the matter, Steve?
The base will believe, well, they've proven it, anything. And I don't think they should be our standard for what's important, because the Trump could tell the quote-unquote base that he's going to fly to Mars tomorrow, and it looks like most of them would believe it. So I don't think we should decide what is or not important based on what those people think, because I can't understand them.
I am. How about you, Scotty? Where's your head on this?
It's just another thing, you know. I mean, we're listening. We touched on it earlier about the withdrawal of troops from Syria. Part of me is like, great. I don't like troops. I mean, we've been sending them everywhere in the last decade. It's time that they came home. But there's another part of me that he didn't consult the Pentagon. Apparently, allegedly, he just sort of woke up and said, "Well, I'm going to do this." And there are deeper, you know, repercussions to this.
Why do you think he just did this all of a sudden?
Yeah, it's a smokescreen for something else.
Are you just talking about something serious now?
Now we're in Syria. We didn't even get to you about the foundation.
That was quite a pivot into something serious from Trump.
No, but I think that's it's amazing, but I think it may be that. It's like, I'm going to do something presidential and positive, so I'll pull the troops out of Syria. By God, I said I was going to do that. Now I'm going to do it. Obama, you know, would either telegraph it or not do it, but I will just do it.
Well, that's what I meant, that it chips away his confidence, and he has to do something to counteract that. That it just makes him irrational.
I give some credit to the Republicans who are on their hind legs about this, because they certainly would have gone nuts had Obama done something like that.
And they're not on their hind legs enough. In fact, here's
not
a
enough,
story.
But there are
well, maybe
some.
Because this coincides with their beliefs that they aren't kowtowing to the president. Rand Paul thinks we should be out of Syria, so here we go.
But they are kowtowing to the president. There's a news story that just came out in the last few days that the Trump Victory Fund is merging with the RNC, the Republican National Committee. They're going to be in the same offices and be the same thing.
Really?
Yes. So the Republican Party has clearly gone all in on Trumpism, and they have absolutely no deniability going forward.
Is the fact, to get back to this charity thing, the fact that he's clearly a con artist and a grifter.
Remember Trump University?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you're going to have the majority of his base, the vast majority of his base is going to continue to say, oh, fake news, and we stick by him, and he breaks the norms and so on. But the gradual accumulation of all this information has got to be eroding at his support, that maybe people will still vote for him, but they won't get their neighbors out to vote for him.
Did you hear what I just said?
I know. You're saying that the party is going all in on him, but I'm talking about average voters, people who voted for him or took a chance on him. And we saw this in the midterm. We saw a lot of voters who had taken a chance on Trump, who are now rejecting him. And I think that you're going to see that not in the base, but in the margins, in the middle, between the 35-yard lines. You're going to see people who are going like, this guy has gone too far, and there's just one more story, and finally it's broken my back.
I would disagree with you, and only if the economy continues to go the way it appears to be going now, and that's like swirling down the crapper. That's what's happening right now. No, that's what we're seeing. And if it does, that,
I don't understand. Like 6 weeks ago, we were in the best freaking economy in the history of the world, and now it's over. I mean, I don't know how this happens, but I think that
who's
Trump
in charge?
I think the Trump charity thing is more important than you're giving it credit to. This isn't his money. He was taking money to other people donating to his charity, and the Attorney General of New York, her accusation was that they were then using that money not just for personal reasons but for campaign reasons.
Right.
If the Cohen stuff is important for campaign finance fraud,
yeah, right.
this stuff
is
too. This is a state investigation that he can't dismiss, or his attorney general de jure can't quash. So I think this is not insignificant at all.
I think you're absolutely right. This could. I mean, there's a number of ways that this administration is going to collapse, and that's one of them. I think criminally and impeachment. And to the point, when does it reach critical mass? And it can't. It simply can't when the Trump campaign and the RNC have merged together. Effectively merge their operations. There is no way in God's green earth the Republicans in the Senate.
I don't know that that's what's going to keep it from happening, but I still don't see it. You know, Eric's floating the death by 1,000 cuts, and then we're at 247 cuts. I just think it's still. Every time I make a pronouncement like this, I'm completely wrong. So I'm hedging my bet here. You know, I'm either going to be right or I'm going to get what I want. But I just. You know, if not by now, then how does this tip it? You know, I just don't understand that.
Well, I think what Scott said is it might not tip it, but it adds to the weight of it.
I guess. Maybe it'll eventually sink. You know, we talked to Charity Watch, which is an organization that's neutral, based here in Chicago. We had the CEO and founder of it on this week. And he said that this is, and they don't rate on a scale of 1 to F this one because it's a private foundation. They do public ones. But he said this has got all the hallmarks of an F-rated charity in the background of people's minds. So when I wonder what the Clintons were, because they had a staff of 2,000,
right,
and they weren't spending money the way some people thought they should. If you believe that an independent source on this can be independent, and that's all I got, he said we give the Clinton Foundation an A. It's a different kind of foundation. It's not one that just, you know, spends money as thinly as possible. They actually do work. They have staff. And it's a great charity, says Charity Watch.
I think that's the view shared by most of those people.
It is. I mean he's not the first one to tell me
other
that.
Other than the people who made stuff up that, you know, and just said it often enough to where all of a sudden we started questioning the Clinton Foundation, I think it had a good reputation.
John, what you're neglecting to mention is that Hillary Clinton's laugh often sounds forced.
Oh, like that.
She wears too many pantsuits. What's wrong?
So, you know, my favorite part of the story, though, is of the revelations about the Trump Foundation. Everybody, tell your favorite one. I'll go first. It's when they found out that the smallest expenditure by the foundation was to the Boy Scouts of America for $7. That was Don Jr.'s application fee when he was a Cub Scout, and the Trump Foundation paid his fee to get into Cub Scouts.
Huh. The Trump Foundation was making huge gifts to the private school where Barron attends. You know, the people giving this foundation money with the idea that they're helping out needy causes, it was going to Barron's school.
Yeah. Okay, you guys don't all have to pile in, but that's kind of what that looks like. Hey, did you follow the story this week of Elon Musk opening up his 1.1-mile tunnel in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I saw a picture. What is it?
Well, it's what he wants to do. Yeah, it's
the electric cars.
It was a prototype, and your car would kind of go into it, vroom, go the mile, and then come up through an elevator shaft and be where it's supposed to be. Like you're say coming up and out of Lower Wacker Drive. Only in this case, you would travel a distance, and then at least in the prototype, an elevator takes you out from underground back up to the top. But that's the sort of thing he wants to bore from, say, Union Station to O'Hare. I'm all in. I want that to happen.
Well, and I think it's just for the self-driving cars, right?
Self-driving cars, right? Self-driving electric cars.
So you don't have to worry about pedestrians or cyclists and...
There would be none of them down there. Yeah.
Right.
Or there'd probably be some homeless people sleeping in a cardboard tents, and there'd be an advocacy group for them, and then it would shut the whole thing down. But that's my petty pig. that's me. That's me recollecting what's happened on Lakeshore Drive. Okay, they're whispering in my ear that we have to wrap up this week's podcast.
Wait, so many things to get to.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hi.
Let's ignore them.
Okay.
We'll bar the door in the studio. We'll just keep going.
I did a podcast with Eric Zorn once, and the producer was waving in his face, and he refused to stop talking.
That's the power of Eric's thoughts and words. By the way, can we all just close with not only our recommendation, but our favorite tweet of good cheer? Eric gave us the top 10 winter holiday-themed tweets and more in a column dated December 18th, 2018 in the Chicago Tribune. These 10 are so funny. Oh, my God.
You know, all of what you do is good, Eric, but your Twitter collections are really the best.
It looks like so much work to me because you do this every week. And these are terrific. So, Patty, pick one that you think is especially noteworthy.
Okay. Well, I just because I like puns, no gifts to bring, more like little bummer boy.
I'll do number 10 on the list. I bet the other two wise men were like, the gold is from all of us.
Am I the only one who wonders why the Flintstones celebrate Christmas?
That is good. That's one you just pause and go, wait a minute.
I read that from the stage this weekend. It sounds like a good cheer for each one. And it's funny how the laughter goes on that one. People like, there's a little bit of laughter, and then it rolls and ripples. People react after like 10 seconds.
Am I the only one who wonders why the Flintstones celebrate Christmas?
No thanks, Santa. I'd rather just be naughty all year long and buy my own presents.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Eric, you get to pick one.
I'll pick one. I really like the main reason Santa is so jovial is because he knows where all the bad girls live.
Nice.
Can I do one more?
Sure.
If you hold a gift card close enough to your ear, you can hear the person who bought it saying, "This'll do."
Love that one.
Any recommendations, things you guys are watching, listening to, reading, whatnot? By the way, totally on Team Mrs. Maisel now, loving the show. I know Patty's not. Don't recommend it, Patty, but I think it's terrific.
I think it's a charming and well-written and well-performed show. As a stand-up comic, it's just hard to watch.
It's just so complicated for you.
It's a little complicated.
I have a request, actually. My recommendation is a request to our listeners. If I'm working on a logo, which we have to do after the show, we have to sit down for a few minutes and talk logo for the Mincing Rascals. We've been talking about this for what? Since the early 70s, I think. And it's time. So I'm inviting the listeners to send me your ideas. Go ahead and email me at sstantis@chicagotribune.com. That's sstantis@chicagotribune.com. Tell me what you think the logo should be. Or give me some ideas.
Yeah,
because
you'll incorporate them.
We've been talking about this for a while, and we got Bupkis.
Oh.
Yeah, we always talk about
it. We got Bupkis from you because you're the artist.
You're the artist. I could draw one. It would be really ugly.
What's your recommendation, Mr. Zorn?
My recommendation is an article in The Guardian. The headline is, Beto O'Rourke frequently voted for Republican legislation, analysis reveals. And it's by Dave Sirota, who's a very progressive journalist. And he talks, the subhead is, review of Beto O'Rourke's six-year record in Congress shows that he frequently opposed his own party, the Democrats, and supported bills that boosted the fossil fuel industry and Trump's immigration policy.
So it's really cooled my Beto fever that he's going to be the guy who's going to run for president in 2020.
It should warm your Beto
fever. He has got this sort of Kennedy-esque quality to him. He's very well spoken. But you look at his votes, and he's not going to excite the progressive base like people thought he was going to.
How about you, Paige?
Interesting article.
If I may self-indulge, I don't know if it came out right, but there's a podcast that I kind of co-host with Renato Mariotti. He's a CNN legal analyst and former federal prosecutor. And if you're into all the legal stuff that's going on, he really digs deep and has some great guests on there.
What's it called?
On Topic.
On Topic. Search for that wherever you search for your finer podcast. Yes.
Where can we find it?
You can find it anywhere you find podcasts, including iTunes. And
The weird thing about this one is it's $29 an episode. Most podcasts are free, and that really helps.
But the other weird thing is it's worth it.
We've had like the former FEC chair. We've had legal counsel for the White House. We've had someone who worked on a lot of civil rights. It's just an amazing podcast for all these legal minds, because I'm a legal dork. I like that stuff.
Renato's really smart, too.
Let's also include your podcast, or pardon me, your recommendations. Remember, we're always soliciting your input. You can voice message us, the Mincing Rascals, and either leave a recommendation, a subject you'd like us to cover, or a question you'd like to ask. And here are a couple of your recommendations.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I'd like to recommend the book Nothing Good Can Come of This. It's about an alcoholic and her journey to sobriety, and basically all of the struggles and the nuances that come with the journey. It's a very refreshing take, and I think it's relatable for anybody, whether you're a social drinker, an alcoholic yourself, or you don't drink at all. It really is just very eye-opening.
I would recommend the book The Princess Bride by William Goldman. I know a lot of people have seen the movie, and the movie is fantastic, but as usual, the book is even better. It will actually make you laugh out loud. I have the same copy that I have had in high school, and I've probably read it at least 5 times and made everyone around me read it.
Thank you. Our Mincing Rascals podcasts are produced by L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNRadio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.